Hello, and welcome to Mystery Road. My name is Taylor.
And my name is Donovan. Mystery Road is a monthly podcast that examines the dark, strange, and unknown.
Want more updates on the show? Follow us on Instagram at Mystery Road Pod. Have suggestions and ideas for future shows? Email us at mysterieroadpod@gmail.com.
Help support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/mysteryroadpod. Now, let's take a stroll down Mystery Road.
Greetings, fellow seekers of the extraordinary. Welcome to another captivating episode of Mystery Road. I'm Taylor, and I'm here with the connoisseur of curiosities, Donovan. Today, we're unearthing the perplexing life of Bob Lazar, from his unassuming beginnings to his audacious experiments and research.
Hello, everyone. I'm absolutely pumped about today's episode. Bob Lazar is a name that's synonymous with intrigue and controversy. Listeners, you're in for a treat today, as we peel back the layers of a man who claims to have worked on extraterrestrial technology inside a military base called S4, approximately 15 miles south of Area 51. Exploring his life might just give us some insight into the man behind the mystery.
Bob was born on January 26, 1959, in Coral Gables, Florida, to his parents Albert and Phyllis Lazar. He had a seemingly normal life in a nice suburban neighborhood with hardworking parents that were focused and determined to provide Bob with a good education. Bob's parents quickly found he was amazed and highly involved with science and engineering. He soon developed a love for a rocket and jet propulsion.
Soon, Bob's fascination with rockets made him the talk of the neighborhood. It's not every day you hear about someone attaching a jet engine to a bicycle. But that's exactly what Bob did in 1977. He rigged a small jet engine to a bike frame, creating a contraption that was both mind-boggling and potentially dangerous. This venture was just the beginning of his unorthodox thinking and audacity to explore the limits of technology.
Between the years 1976 and 1979, a transformative journey whisked Bob away to the vibrant cityscapes of Los Angeles. He found himself attending Pierce Junior College, immersing himself in the mesmerizing world of physics. As the pages of his academic narrative gracefully turned, he ventured onwards to the prestigious Caltech, a realm where his insatiable thirst of knowledge culminated not in one, but two postgraduate degrees, one in electronic technology and the other in the mysterious field of physics.
Then in the year 1982, the winds of change carried him to the historic landscapes of Massachusetts. Here, within the hallowed halls of Massachusetts Institute for Technology, more commonly referred to as MIT, Bob added yet another layer to the rich tapestry of his academic journey. While his time at MIT might have been brief, it paved a way for a crucial chapter in his life. Shortly thereafter, Bob took his first steps into the professional world, securing a position at the renowned Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. His role was engaging in the realm of nuclear weapon development, a field that had held both intrigue and gravity.
But here's where the story takes an unexpected turn. Amidst the quiet town of Los Alamos, a newspaper headline thrusted Bob into the limelight. The local physicist had accomplished transforming his humble Honda into a roaring marvel by integrating a jet engine, propelling the car to speeds exceeding 200 miles per hour. Bob's neighbors have been interviewed, saying it was hard to miss him. He had a jet dragster he used to race with at the local drag strip, with one neighbor having said the jet dragsters are rare, but to have one in your neighborhood, you have to go talk to the guy and check it out.
As fate would have it, on the very day this article was unveiled, the eminent Edward Teller, often dubbed the father of the hydrogen bomb, was giving a lecture at the Los Alamos National Laboratory. Bob, having cut his workday short, hurried to the lecture. There he spotted Edward, engrossed in the newspaper article about his souped-up Honda. Seizing the moment, Bob approached the legendary physicist, sparking a conversation that would intertwine their paths in an unexpected way.
Bob Lazar's journey at S4 is a window into the unknown, and we're about to peer through the glass. In 1988, after an eight-year hiatus, Bob moved from Los Alamos to Las Vegas, where Bob decided to return to his scientific roots. He reached out to a few scientists with resumes, one which caught the attention of none other than Edward Teller. A recommendation from Edward quickly brought him to the top of the list with EG&G, opening the door to an interview for an advanced propulsion job. Bob understood he would need top secret and above top secret access for the position. During his employment at S4, he was paid by the U.S. Navy for his work and contributions, and has used his pay stubs from the Navy to help support his claims. However, what Bob didn't realize is he would be dumbfounded with what he would discover.
What Bob thought would be another normal science job with high-level clearance became the job that made him question what was real and what was not. Picture this. He got off a bus with blacked-out windows and approached an open hangar and was met with the sight that defied all expectations, a flying saucer, poised for examination. As Bob stated in his podcast with Joe Rogan, "I went into the hangar door, and in the door was the disc. The flying saucer I worked on. I thought, oh my God, this finally explains all the flying saucer stories. This is just an advanced fighter." Little did he know he would be working on that craft's propulsion system, trying to learn even the basics of how this technology could work.
Bob walked by the craft and slid his hand across it and was immediately reprimanded for it. Bob was provided briefings to get him up to speed with the current theories of the science and technology for his specific project. He was also provided 1 to 2 page briefings regarding the most important information of what the other teams were working on in case it helped with his research. Bob soon learned that the craft was not of this world and it wasn't the only one the U.S. government had. On one occasion, the position of the curtains were pulled back enough that Bob was able to count a total of 9 crafts in the U.S. government's possession. Each craft was a different shape and size, although Bob was unable to get a good enough look to describe each one individually. He did fixate on one that looked like it had been damaged. Bob theorizes the craft was either shot down, damaged from a crash, or tests were performed to see if the material could be penetrated with weapons of the time. What's intriguing is the shadow tapestry that enveloped the whole operation. Bob mentions how different labs were working on specific facets of the spacecraft to prevent any individual from holding the full puzzle. This cloak of secrecy shrouded the entire endeavor, as S4's veil of mystery remained intact.
Working alongside a lab partner named Barry, Bob began to unravel the mysteries of the subcomponents of the craft. Barry and Bob were assigned to work on a small reactor not much larger than a basketball sitting on a metal table. Barry, having been there longer with somewhat more of an understanding than Bob, urged Bob to touch it. But the sheer force of the gravity repelled his hands. Bob described the feeling as trying to push opposite poles of a magnet together, but with no magnets, just your hand and the device. It was here that Bob began his journey into technology that, to him, defied the laws of physics as we understand them. Bob soon came to the realization the device created some type of gravity distortion wave and was the propulsion system for the craft he was assigned to work on.
Bob's task was to reverse engineer the spacecraft to the best of his abilities so that we could recreate it with our own technology. Bob soon learned that whoever these crafts belonged to had developed technology to create gravitational fields to distort, warp, or bend space-time to achieve long-distance, deep space travel. Meaning, if you are at point A and need to get to point B, the logical thinking is a straight line being the fastest route. However, with what Bob had learned, the greater the gravitational field, the closer points A and B become, thus shortening the distance of travel. Even today, the effects of a gravitational field in space-time is something scientists have been able to observe. However, although we are able to observe it, experimentation is limited to non-existent. More recently, in 2015, Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory in the U.S. detected the first gravitational waves caused by 2 massive black holes spinning into each other. Bob further theorizes, based on his work at S4, any type of gravitational field will distort space-time, whether occurring naturally through inconceivable amounts of mass or generated artificially. The greatest benefit being you can turn on and off an artificially created gravitational field. Bob was able to get to watch one of the crafts perform basic movements such as up, down, and side to side. However, high-performance tests were done above the mountain range for less eyes to potentially see experiments that were being performed.
At this point, Bob is fueled by excitement, but was slowly succumbing to the concerns over the very nature of what he was handling. Bob struggled with the associated injustice of keeping a secret of another highly advanced civilization from the public. Bob's time at S4 was a roller coaster of awe and trepidation. Bob recalled Russian scientists being a part of the program. However, another team made a breakthrough and the Russian scientists were not seen at the facility again. Bob asked countless of times what that breakthrough was, but was unable to get an answer. S4 was so compartmentalized and secure knowledge between the teams, even what other teams were working on was not shared. Only information was shared between one's team and reported to the higher-ups. After a mere 6 months at S4, Bob's mission reached a point where they only could grasp a reasonable idea of how to make the reactor function, but were unable to even begin to recreate it. It was constructed with a material that Bob called Element 115, an element that hadn't even appeared on our periodic table at the time. The significance of this discovery is beyond staggering. Element 115, more commonly known as muscovium, is an unstable isotope. However, Bob claims to have worked with a stable Element 115, which fueled the spacecraft's propulsion system.
After several months of working irregular, odd-time shifts, when he would get calls to report for work at S4, his wife began to suspect Bob was having an affair and soon started having one of her own. Knowing what was happening while Bob was at work, the people in charge decided to hold off on calling Bob back to work for a short period of time and started having him followed to ensure he didn't go off the deep end. Bob became concerned he was being kicked out of the program, and even more so for his life. In an effort to have a few people know the truth if something were to happen to him, he told a few of his closest friends, and having had the flight schedule, led them out to the lake where the test flights were done on not one, not two, but three separate occasions. They took video footage that is now in possession of George Knapp, but by his own admission is shoddy footage at best because of the technology at the time. Bob also admits they were guys in their 20s, being foolish and on the final trip, brought a camper, were grilling, and not taking any caution for what was happening. Bob's excursions were exposed when they were caught by guards. Funny enough, the guards were actually caught by Bob and his friends after dropping a night vision device. Bob noticed a green light on the ground, turned the camper lights on, and saw they were surrounded. The next day, he reported for debrief, ready to face the consequences of his actions. He was let go with a surprising lack of punishment. Rather, he was told, "Don't tell anyone means your friends too, Bob." Bob then was provided a transcript between his wife and a friend of hers showing they were having an affair. This was the point when Bob knew every action in his life and his family's lives were being closely monitored. Bob knew he needed to share the knowledge he had with the public as insurance to protect himself.
In 1989, Bob was introduced to George Knapp, an investigative journalist, who conducted a series of interviews with Bob. George's investigation revealed several troubling, but also odd details of Bob's life. George was unable to confirm that Bob went to college at Caltech and MIT, both having indicated no record of Bob. George then turned to Los Alamos National Laboratory to confirm employment. They too said no records of Bob working with their company could be found. Though George, being a veteran investigator, did it. He found a 1982 Los Alamos National Laboratory phone book, which revealed Robert Bob Lazar was in fact an employee, a physicist. George also found a newspaper article about Los Alamos and Bob's Honda, again confirming his employment with them. Bob agreed to undergo several, I believe a total of 4 polygraph examinations with George, all of which Bob passed without any indication of deception. George also mentioned that the headhunter service that hired Bob for Los Alamos initially indicated they had records of Bob and would send them to him. However, when he followed up a few weeks later, they claimed they had no records of Bob now. With all the information George had learned, he felt it was time to air the interviews on live TV. The essence of the news segment covers Bob's claims about his involvement in reverse engineering an alien spacecraft, His descriptions of these advanced vehicles powered by the unknown Element 115 offered a tantalizing peek into the world that defied the laws of science as we know it.
It wasn't just the technology that Bob unveiled. It was the haunting implications of what this technology meant for the human race. His assertions about the potential of anti-gravity propulsion systems and the blurred line between science fiction and the reality had the world spellbound. Their conversations not only lifted the veil on S4, but also thrusted Bob's claims of extraterrestrial technology into the spotlight. After the initial interview, Bob did several subsequent interviews regarding the technology he had worked with and the theories surrounding it, as well as attempting to simplify the theories to where non-scientific individuals would understand and comprehend.
After going public, Bob's life changed forever. Everything about him disappeared, from his birth certificate, to his college degrees, to his work history. Someone, or some organization, was trying to erase Bob. Most likely an attempt to discredit him so that no one would believe him. However, thankfully George didn't allow that to happen. Not only that, friends of Bob also felt negative effects of Bob going public by having their lives disrupted too. Although many people have been skeptical of the truth, there have been many recent discoveries of extraterrestrial beings that people should take into consideration when talking about the truth behind Bob's story.
As of recently, a few government documents have been exposed to the public. One of the events being the Tic Tac UFO phenomenon. In November 2004, when U.S. Navy fighter pilots aboard the USS Nimitz encountered a strange and highly maneuverable object, a Tic Tac-shaped UFO. The encounter was a testament to the unknown and ignited a fury of discussion within the world of ufology.
What makes this encounter so remarkable is the sheer credibility of the witnesses. Trained military personnel, sophisticated technology, all encountering something beyond the scope of their understanding. The encounter involved radar confirmations, onboard camera footage, and eyewitness testimonies that weave a narrative that's hard to dismiss. The object's movements defied the laws of physics, accelerating and maneuvering in ways that boggled the minds of those who witnessed it. Bob also described a biometric bone scanner for your hand to scan and provide you with your pass to get into S4. Many people called BS on this and called him crazy. However, recently disclosed documents from Area 52 showed these scanners were in fact in use at the site during the same time period. When shown a photo for the first time in the Netflix documentary, Bob was blown away with conviction with yet another form of evidence helping prove his story.
Since going public, Bob has been living the life of a somewhat normal person. Married with his own business, a scientific supply and equipment company called United Nuclear Scientific Equipment and Supplies, which sells a range of scientific and educational products. The company offers items such as chemicals, lab equipment, and radioactive ore supplies for educational and research purposes. After concluding filming for the Netflix documentary, his house was raided by the FBI. However, nothing of interest was found and no charges were brought against him. Bob often ponders if going public was the right thing to do. He hasn't benefited from this. Any money he gains from interviews, podcasts, or films is all donated to the science community to help fund education and further progress in science. It's for you to decide, is the story based on fact? Does the recent UAP committee hearing help prove what he has said for 30 plus years? Do the UAP whistleblowers know what Bob did and can they confirm it?
That's it for this episode. Thank you all very much for taking the time to listen to our podcast. Next month, we'll be traveling across the Atlantic to London to investigate the unsolved crimes of Jack the Ripper. If you like our content, please like, share, and subscribe. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Mystery Road Pod. Also, consider donating to our show at patreon.com/Mystery Road Pod to help support the show. If you have ideas for future shows, email us at mysteryroadpod@gmail.com. Links will be in the show notes.